The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer, member FINRA SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Salnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Salnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.
This is the Retirement and IRA Show coming to you from beautiful Northern Colorado. Join us this morning as certified financial planner Jim Salnier, as well as Colorado State University finance instructor and certified financial planner Chris Stein, teach you about IRAs, 401ks, annuities, Social Security, pension plans, and estate planning in a fun and enjoyable show. Whether you are listening live in Colorado or streaming from their website or iTunes podcast, Jim and Chris want you to know that they're available to help you plan for your retirement. Just visit their website at jimhelps.com. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. And click the Meet the Team button on the homepage. Now, here's Jim and Chris with today's show.
Welcome to today's show, where we're going to talk about some 457B accounts. We haven't talked about those much in the past. We'll also discuss a listener's question about Roth IRA disallowed contributions and earnings limits related to those Roth contributions. We're also going to take a look at a recent Morningstar article that names 20 IRA mistakes to avoid. So we'll hear all that today on the Retirement and IRA Show. My name is Chris Stein. I'm here with Jim Salnier in studio today. This is a pre-recorded show, so no calls today like we did last week. Last week we had a live show. We'll have another live show, I believe, late this month, maybe next week. We haven't discussed it. So, Jim, do you have a preference on that?
I'll have to check my very busy social calendar.
No problem. So next week there will be a show. Live or recorded, one or the other. So today, though, no calls. We are going to handle a few.
Well, they can call, couple just of emails. Nobody will answer.
You can email us, but we won't get it live.
Nope.
Today for us is April 12th, I believe. I'm not paying a lot of attention today. Yes, April 12th. This is going to air for the first time on the radio April 16th. So two more days before your taxes are due. So happy last weekend before taxes are due.
No, they're due on the 18th.
That's what I just said.
Today's the 12th.
Today's the 16th for people who are listening.
Oh, people who are listening, yes. But you're confusing me. I'm sitting here on the 12th. And
well, I'm talking to those people, not you.
Oh.
You just happen to be sitting here.
Never mind.
Have you paid your taxes yet?
Negative. I filed an extension.
Yeah.
And I still have to pay, but I filed an extension.
True. That always confuses me a little bit. If you know how much you have to pay, then aren't you done?
According to my CPA, no. Because a certain person, who shall remain nameless, mm-hmm. has not given her everything was supposed to.
Then how could she know how much to pay?
She said, I'm not going to owe.
Oh.
I've paid enough, she said.
Oh, in
quarterlies.
Quarterly.
Yes.
Estimated tax
absolutely.
Payments.
Absolutely. She said, so
well,
because.
Then you're fine. That makes perfect sense. But for people, say not doing a business tax return, but their own personal tax return, extensions always confuse me. Because if you've done enough work to know how much you owe so that you can pay it, which
just
you're required
the taxes.
To do, why it must be done. And if it's not done, then how do you know how much you owe? I guess you could pay
lot of people
just throw a bunch of extra at it or something.
Or they don't and they pay the penalty.
Most people probably do that, is my guess. They take the extension as, I'm going to extend filing and also extend paying.
Exactly. And then
which
I'll
you
just
can do,
pay the
but
penalty.
They're going to charge you.
They're going to charge you the penalty.
Penalty.
Yes.
So, yeah. Okay. Well, today's a beautiful day.
It is. Mm-hmm. And by the time this is playing, it's supposed to be a rainy weekend this weekend.
Oh,
so,
it is?
Yeah.
Oh.
It's going to be in the 70s for the next 3 days, and then just in time for the weekend, it's supposed to be a rainy Saturday and Sunday, which is good. We need it. So I want to get the moisture. I'm going to put some fertilizer and crabgrass preventer down Friday before the rain and let Mother Nature water it all into the ground.
Very wise.
Ah, I thought so.
I always like in the spring when you can get some fertilizer and crabgrass, and then there's a nice wet snow comes on top of there and soaks it down in.
Yeah.
And then
it
I
comes
can't
in really
that.
Green. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, before we start, we have two new stars to add to our country. We need
star
music.
It's like the sound of a star, like
that is not a star.
Well, how do you know? Have you heard a star?
No.
Out in space, that's what they sound like.
We need some
like.
Sort of music. For those who don't know, behind us.
Here I come to save the day.
That's kind of like a star, shooting star, kind of like
coming to save the day.
Mm-hmm.
Behind us is a map of the United States.
Of America.
Of America. And we are trying to fill it with people who contact us with email questions, comments, or obscene remarks. And we are getting full.
Fuller, yeah.
Fuller, but we have two new ones. Mm-hmm. We I counseled someone from Tennessee on life insurance.
Where in Tennessee? Do we know?
Yes. Begins with an L. Louder, I think.
Where in Tennessee?
No. Louder. Oh. I think the city is Louder.
Oh.
I have no idea where in Tennessee it is. Does it matter?
Well, I like to put the star close to the actual place, but I'll just put it in the middle.
Put it in the middle of Tennessee. Now you can see that the Confederate states are filling up all of a sudden. We have Tennessee, North Carolina, Virginia, and Georgia all recently. Mm-hmm. And Hawaii.
Oh, we got a Hawaii?
We got a Hawaii email this morning. I didn't tell you about it.
No, you didn't.
An actual financial planner from Hawaii. Who?
Oh, this is even worse than a regular state because now there's multiple islands on which to place the star. Which island?
He's in Hilo. H-I-L-O.
Oh.
Hilo?
Hilo is how that's...
Hilo? Wouldn't that be H-E-L-O?
It's Hawaiian.
Well, he's in Hilo, Hawaii, or Hilo, Hawaii.
That's on the mainland of Hawaii. Not the mainland, but the big island.
He is a financial planner. He wants us to reach out to him, so either you or me have to reach out to him. So he downloaded HelpWithMySocialSecurity.com podcast, and he's been listening to him and learning a lot about Social Security. And he wrote... that he is an independent advisor, and he's starting to understand the value of becoming knowledgeable in the topic of Social Security. And he has some questions about Social Security for us.
Interesting.
So I haven't reached out to him yet.
Maybe we'll have to go on site for
consultation. I was thinking that. I was exactly thinking that somehow I think a trip to Hawaii to counsel this fellow advisor.
Perfect.
May be necessary.
That sounds great.
And totally tax deductible, perhaps.
Maybe.
I have no idea. But no, I'm not going to fly to Hawaii to counsel them. But anyways, Tennessee and Hawaii this week. So we are filling up. Now what are you looking at?
Just the way Hawaii is on this map, it's kind of odd. They basically cover up all the all of the country of Mexico with this part for Hawaii. And Hawaii is actually quite small. Whoever made this map found Hawaii very valuable, apparently, or very important. And Alaska, poor Alaska, it's about a third the size.
We don't have anything from Alaska yet.
Washington, which is close.
Washington is close. And I hope to be going back to Alaska, not this year, but either next year or the year after with my buddy Chris to go fishing. He has never fished before, so fished in Alaska before. Hmm. And his soon-to-be wife is dragging him to South Carolina. She's relocating, and he has to go with her. So... he said, well, let's go fish in Alaska before I end up in South Carolina.
Hmm. Good idea.
And so, we're going to be flying into Sitka, Alaska, and fishing from Sitka, and then hiking. We're going to spend a couple days hiking and about 3 or 4 days fishing. What are you looking at me for?
Hiking around there is a little dangerous. There's a lot of predators.
Well,
that like to eat fishermen, fisher people.
Yeah, we won't go into the forest smelling like fresh salmon.
I don't think you have to go in the forest. I think they come looking for you. And they can smell. They can smell your fisherman smell from about 2 miles away, from what I hear.
No, I hope not. That would be a horrendous way to go, being mauled alive.
Or mauled to the death. Either one.
But you're alive as you're being mauled.
True.
That's painful. It's like being eaten by a shark. Okay.
I think that'd be worse, maybe. Do you think that'd be worse, a bear or a shark?
If I had my choice, I'd choose neither.
I didn't. That wasn't a choice, a bear or a shark.
There's no, that's not a choice you even want to make. How about a butterfly? I want to be attacked by a butterfly.
Why do you keep changing the choices? You can't just change the choices. In life, sometimes there's two choices and only two.
I don't want either choice.
Or a shark. You're on the cliff. It's only about 30 feet down, so you're not going to die of jumping off into the water. But behind you is a bear. Look down the cliff, great white shark. What are you going to do?
The bear, because maybe I can fake death and roll up in a little ball, and he'll leave me alone.
Right. Probably. I think I'd go that route, too. Because when you do that in water, then you're in
sink.
Trouble.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So I'd have to constantly be paddling, and the shark will know I'm still alive.
Yeah.
Okay, solved. Can we move on to the...
Yep, I'm ready.
Perfect. Okay, so we did receive an email, and we cannot put a star on any state because I'm not sure where this particular gentleman hails from.
I can Google him, maybe. He's famous.
No, we're not going to Google him. Okay, we're going to call him, though, what we always call our... In fact, he actually signed his email with George in parentheses after his real name.
Just what I always wanted, my own little bunny rabbit. I will name him George, and I will hug him and pet him and squeeze him.
I'm not a bunny rabbit.
Okay. He must be a long-time listener, then.
He must be. That. Well, actually, he said he's only been listening for the past few months.
Well, we have Georges regularly.
We do Georges. So. For those who don't know, we call everyone who emails us George. We don't want to necessarily share their information. We feel that if someone is emailing us, they're doing so because they want to remain private. Whereas if they call the radio show, they that's different. They're on a live show, so they'll say what their name is. But we protect everyone's privacy by calling them George. And he began, "Hello, Jim and Chris." And he begins with, "Thank you for an entertaining and informative podcast. I've enjoyed listening to them over the past few months and didn't realize that retirement was going to be as complicated as you all talk about." So it is complicated. It is complicated. In fact, there was a person in my office last year. I was helping this couple from the Greeley area, and they had some questions on required distribution and count consolidation and all this. Excuse me. And their son works for the State Department and was back in Colorado from, I believe it was Czechoslovakia. And I was just following his mom and dad around, so they brought him into the office. And I'm helping these people, trying to determine things, and I won't get too much into it. And the guy is sitting there. He was 35 years old. He's sitting there, and he finally interrupted the meeting. Mm-hmm. And he said, "I thought retirement was supposed to be easy." I always remember that. I always remember that because the look on his face as his poor parents, who were in their 70s, were trying to deal with this. And I met them again recently. The son wasn't with him. He was back out doing his State Department things. And this time the gentleman was sharing that he doesn't like it. He said it is more complicated, which is true, in retirement, because he said, "Before I retired, I had my salary. And that's all I had to worry about. Now he has distributions from 401ks, distributions from IRAs. He has interest. He has dividends. He has a private placement, so he's getting a K-1. He has all these different types of income, all these tax situations. He has Social Security. Some Social Security is taxable. Other Social Security isn't taxable. The calculation for determining the taxation of Social Security is a different calculation for determining your modified adjusted gross income to determine other things on his tax return. It just, he said, "I don't like it. It is more
I don't like it.
Complex." Yeah. And it's true, and that's what we share with people. It is. Retirement isn't easy. If it is, we wouldn't have a job. Okay, so let's get to this gentleman's question. So it's a two-part question. The first part is he believes he is going to earn too much this year to contribute to Roth IRAs. I'm not going to read his whole email because it's a little bit lengthy. So he does share with us in the email that in 2015, he and his wife, they have their Roth IRAs at Vanguard. He and his wife put $5,500 into their Roth IRAs last year. This year, they started putting $600 a month in between the two of them. And they put it in for January, February, and March. Now, he said he got a new job. He's a surgeon, and his salary is going to rise this year to $200,000. And he feels at $200,000, he is going to earn more than the earnings limit to be able to contribute to a Roth. Last year, he said he earned less than the limit, but with his new job and promotion, he's going to be making more money, and he thinks he's going to exceed the earnings limit, and he wants to know the best way of removing the excess contribution to his Roths. Remember, January, February, and March, he put $600 in. I'm assuming since it was divided up between his and his wife's Roth, they put $300 in each, but I have no idea. So a couple of things to this gentleman, because I told him we were going to answer his question, and I apologize if I'm going to keep coughing. Andrew gave me the Belgian bug. You haven't got that yet, have you?
He came all the way from Belgium?
He was in Belgium 2 weeks ago, and he came back last week, rather. And he was in Belgium and France and Germany. But he was in Belgium when that little bomb thing went off at the airport. And he wasn't at the airport, but he was there when broke loose.
Wow.
But anyways, long story short, he came back with a cold. Cold that he couldn't shake for a whole week. And I told him, you can't go bringing European colds over to my office. None of us have immunities to these. Well, sure enough,
very dangerous.
I caught it.
Great.
Yeah, now you're going to get it.
Probably.
Yeah, and we have no immunity. It's like the Zika virus. We're done. So he brought this European bug in. I call it the Belgian bug. I don't know if it was the German goo, the French, whatever he was
fungus.
In. Fungus. He was in all these different countries. But the last 3 days, he was in Belgium, and he said that's when he started feeling sick. So he didn't know what country he caught it in. So I call it the Belgian bug, and I got it.
Did you go to your doctor and ask them if they have anything to help you with the Belgian bug?
No, you just, we have no immunity to this. We got to let it go its due course. He was out of the, he had to take 1 day off. He said he felt so sick. But so far, I haven't had to take any time off.
Great.
But anyway, so I got a little tickle in my throat. Okay, so we have a surgeon who has a new job, going to be getting a pay raise, and going to be grossing about $200,000. Roth IRAs have phase-out limits to be able to put money in. The government doesn't want higher-paid individuals to be able to benefit from a Roth. One of those little quirks in the rules of Roth IRAs that bug the heck out of me. But nonetheless, they only want Roths to be available for people who make up to a certain amount of money. So in 2016, he is married, filing a joint tax return. For 2016, the phase-out limits for a married couple are between $184,000 and $194,000. So I want to share with this gentleman, just because you received a pay raise now and you're going to be making about $200,000, a couple of things. I don't know if that's going to be $200,000 in 2016 or is it $200,000 as his annual salary? But remember, it's already 4 months into the year. So is he starting and is it being adjusted or is he going to make $200,000 this year or is it being, it's a $200,000 annual salary, but he's already a quarter of the way through the year, actually more than a quarter of the way, a third of the way through the year. So instead of making $200,000, he's going to make a third less than that or about $140,000 more. If that's the case, clearly he'll be able to contribute this year because last year under his current salary, he could. So the money he made for the first 4 months of this year, plus the money he'll make for the last 8 months of this year, could still keep him under the limit. I don't know the answer to that question, so I just want to share that with him. Just because your salary is now $200,000, did you mean $200,000 from April to the end of the year? Or do you mean your new annual salary is $200,000? And because we're already one-third of the way through the year, you're probably going to be making about $140,000 more. Combined with what you've already earned, you'll still be under the earnings limit, according to my math, but I could be wrong. So,
and the earnings limit isn't a gross amount.
No, and that's what we also want to get into them. The earnings limit, as Chris pointed out, is your modified adjusted gross income. Maggie, it is not your gross income. So modified, and I want to keep this simple, and first thing I do want to disclose to people, neither Chris or I are tax people. So
we've heard of taxes and we've paid taxes in the past.
Yes.
So we have experience, some experience with taxes.
We have heard of taxes, but I will admit that.
But as part of our CFP designation, we are required to get a certain level of education in taxes, income taxes.
Correct.
And income taxes come up all the time. We talk about income tax as it relates to retirement topics and Social Security and pensions and things like that. But we are certainly not experts at every aspect of the tax code.
Correct.
But in this area, it's pretty straightforward.
It's fairly straightforward, and that's what I want to point out to him. Because notice, I haven't told him how to remove the money yet. Because I don't think he should. The rule says, if you put money into a Roth IRA, you have until October 15th of the year following the contribution to remove it. So he has until October 15th of 2017 to remove it. I don't think he should remove it, and I don't think he should stop contributing because of what I just described earlier. The limits for a married couple this year of modified adjusted gross income is $184,000 to $194,000. If he is going to make $200,000, he's only $6,000 above the $194,000 limit. And what is modified adjusted gross income? It's essentially your adjusted gross income with a few things added to it. What's your adjusted gross income? I'm keeping this real simple. It's your gross income and pretty much subtracted from it, subtracted from it the money you put into retirement accounts.
Pre-tax.
Pre-tax. Accounts. So money that he would have put into his employer retirement account. He said he has a 457 and a 401k. It's probably a 403b, but I'm not sure. It also would include any money he might have put into an HSA account if he had an HSA. So if he grosses $200,000, but he puts he's under the age of 50, so let's say he puts $18,000 into his employer plan. So his adjusted gross income is now
$182,000.
Mm-hmm. And he can have up to 184.
And still make a full Roth contribution.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So I'm not convinced he won't be able to contribute. So he has a choice. He could continue to put the $600 a month in, or put into his Roth, or put the $600 a month off to the side. And when he does his taxes next year, look at what his AGI is. His Maggie, modified adjusted gross income, which again is essentially his adjusted gross income, which, to keep this real simple, is his gross income less money he puts into a deductible retirement account, as well as money that he may put into an HSA. There's a couple of other things that can be deducted from that.
That was kind of loud, sorry.
We don't want to, I saw that you blinded me out with that.
That was shocking.
But and then to get to Maggie, by the way, in case people want to know, there's a few little weird deductions that get added back in. We don't want to get into that. The point I'm trying to explain to this doctor is I don't think he's going to be disqualified. If he is saving the full amount, which is $18,000 into his employer plan, subtract that from the $200,000 he's going to make, his Maggie is going to come in at $182,000. near the 184 but not over it. Mm-hmm. So he can continue to contribute or put the money off to the side, and next year by April 15th put the money in the Roth.
Right. So when we come back from this first break here on the show, we're going to hear one of the top songs from 1935, which is the first year Social Security was enacted. This song was written by the prolific duo of Richard Rodgers and Lorenz Hart, became a beloved ballad, used in many MGM films, but it almost never saw the light of day. So we'll find out what that is right after this short break.
Are you interested in your own customized Social Security analysis? If so, visit us at helpwithmysocialsecurity.com and click the Contact Jim and Chris button. Jim and Chris offer a $75 Social Security optimization analysis that includes a one-hour consultation to discuss the specifics of your Social Security situation. This very affordable offer is for both singles and couples and will provide you with the information you need to make an informed decision about claiming your Social
back to the Retirement and IRA Show. That is one of the top songs from 1935, the year that Social Security Act was signed.
Is that Blue Moon?
What gave it away, Jim?
Well, the guy began with Blue Moon, well, but yeah. It doesn't sound like the ba 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 bang ba bang ba bang. Remember that one? Blue Moon. Is that the same Blue Moon?
It's the same Blue Moon, yeah. A lot of people have recorded Blue Moon. Elvis Presley did Blue Moon.
I like the Sha-na-na version.
Mel Torme, Sha-na-na, all kinds of people. I don't know if they have the Sha-na-na version on there, but maybe we can play that next week.
I always liked that guy with the deep voice, how he could do that.
You can't do that?
I can't go. You can go that deep. I've heard you. But
no, not without hurting myself.
But I like the ba 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 bang bang. Okay, anything else you need to say about that song?
Yes, actually, if you'd like to know, we have fun facts about Blue Moon.
All right.
It was originally written in 1934 for a Gene Harlow movie called Hollywood Party, but it was cut just before the release. Subsequent attempts at rewriting the lyrics and submitting for use in other MGM films failed. It was Hart's fourth rewrite before he came upon a more romantic take on the haunting melody. So if at first you don't succeed, try again, I guess. Right?
Blue Moon. Who's
this?
That's the Sha-na-na version.
Where's the guy with the ba-ba-da-ba-ba-da-ba-ba-ba-ba?
That's a different version, I think. I know the one you're talking about. I could have sworn it was Sha-na-na.
I don't think so. I think it's some real act from the 50s. Sha-na-na was like a 70s version of a 50s group.
Yeah, that's weird. Yeah.
If we were on a live show, I'm sure there's listeners who are shouting out right now who the group from the 50s who sang it with the deep ba-ba-da-ba-ba-da-ba-ba-da-ba. But it's not Sha-na-na.
Apparently not. I could have sworn it was, but
no,
I was
you
wrong.
Were wrong.
I was wrong.
Okay, back to...
What were we talking about?
Back to our question. So we had the surgeon. My first part, he wanted to know what he should do because he received a raise to $200,000 on new job promotion. And he had been putting in money in a Roth IRA, mm-hmm. $600.
A month.
I believe it was $300 in his and $300 in his wife's, but I don't know for sure. Roth IRA at Vanguard. He did say it was at Vanguard. And he feels he is going to, with his now making $200,000, he's going to be ineligible to contribute to a Roth. And he wanted to know if he should remove the money and how to go about doing that. We took the first part of the show to explain to him, I don't think he's going to be over because it's up to between $184,000 and $194,000 for a married couple of modified adjusted gross income, which is essentially your gross income minus money you put into an employer-sponsored retirement account that you can deduct plus a few obscure little deductions. I won't get into that. So I don't feel if he is putting the full $18,000 into his employer plan, he's probably going to have a modified adjusted gross income maybe of $182,000 or less. Mm-hmm.
Especially since this new job isn't starting until now.
Correct.
So there could be some of that in
right.
there.
So, and his previous job didn't pay enough.
But the point is he doesn't have to know and make the call right now. He can go the whole year and wait and see how things turn out. Wait until he's doing his taxes next year. If at that point it's determined that he shouldn't have put any in or should have put in less than the maximum amount, it can be fixed. He still has until October 15th of 2017 to fix over contributions from 2016. So I agree with Jim's comment before that he should probably just continue to contribute. If his goal, if his desire is to fill his Roth IRA with money during the year of 2016, go ahead and do it. Worst case scenario, you might have to transfer some or all of what you put in 2016 back.
Right. So
into
that was
something else.
That was the second question. What does he do? Well, you have two options when you put extra money into a Roth. Again, I feel you should wait until you do your taxes. If you want to avoid having to do, which can sometimes be a convoluted calculation, especially if you are putting money into an existing Roth, and it sounds like you are, you can stop putting money into your Roth IRA and just put money into a bank account off to the side. Earmark it for a Roth calculation. When you do your taxes next year, if it turns out you do come in below the modified adjusted gross income limits, then you take the money from that bank and you just put it into your Roth IRA by April 15th of next year. Or you continue to save in the Roth, and then what you would do, let's just say worst case scenario, Chris, he couldn't put anything in. All's what he does is he has two choices. He can take the money out as a removal of an excess contribution. There will be no taxes owed on the money coming out because your contributions can come out at any time for any reason, no taxes, no penalties. Now, there could be taxes owed on any gains. The IRS says you have to remove the money you put in plus any gains minus any losses. So if the actual investment dropped and he put $6,000 into his Roth and it dropped to $5,500, then nothing is owed. There'll be no taxes or penalties. But if the money grew $500, he'd take the $6,000 out as the removal of an excess contribution and the $500 in earnings. That $500 in earnings will be subject to taxes and a 10% penalty if he's under the age of 59 and a half, and I believe he is. So you do expose yourself to all those issues, hence my suggestion he just puts the money off to the side and determines next year if he has any wiggle room to put money into a Roth, and then he just puts it in next year, and he doesn't have to worry about this convoluted calculation. As for the three $600 contributions he made in January, February, and March, my suggestion is don't remove them yet. There's no need to. Just wait till you do your taxes next year, and then you can remove it. Or you can recharacterize it to a non-deductible IRA. So he would get a hold of Vanguard, his custodian, and say, hey, that $600 I put in for the first 3 months of 2016, I can't put that into a Roth, recharacterize it to an IRA. And now there'll be no taxes or penalties owed. And what it will simply be, though, is he or Vanguard, if they'll do it for him, needs to determine and remove not only the $600 he put in for 3 months or the $1,800 contribution, he'll also have to recharacterize any gains minus any losses to determine how much money is actually moved. And then it just moves to a non-deductible IRA. Now, there's pros and cons to that. The pro is no taxes on any of this, whereas the removal of the excess contribution there would be. However, you will have to start tracking basis now because this is a non-deductible IRA. So you have to start filing Form 8606. And later on in life, the older you is really going to be ticked off at the younger you because that 8606 calculation has to continue every year until all basis is removed. And most people just give up on it and say, to heck with it. I'm not even going to track basis. I'll just pay taxes again on the $1,800. Right. Yeah. I'm going to pay more in preparatory fees to the accountant to keep track of 8606, then I'm going to save in taxes on $1,800. To heck with it. So my suggestion is you just put the money off to the side and not worry about any of that. But as for the money that's in there, let it sit there. Take it out next year if you have to. If you don't have to take it out, then you can finish your full contribution up to the legal limit that you're allowed, depending on where your modified adjusted gross income comes in. So remember, the $184,000 to $194,000 phase-out limit is modified adjusted gross income. It is not gross income. And modified adjusted gross income is your gross income, pretty much less any money you put into a deductible retirement account, plus a few obscure deductions you have to re-add into that. So if he is contributing the full $18,000 to his employer retirement account, I think he's going to come in okay.
One small disadvantage maybe to putting the money off to the side, like you were mentioning, is that if that money would have grown or grows outside of the Roth, any of that growth that would have been tax-free ultimately, correct, in the Roth won't have that kind of protection. But we're not talking about tons of money here. We're only talking about $5,500, right, total.
He has to decide if he wants to deal with the calculation.
Right. Right.
If he has to remove it. It's not a straightforward calculation, especially if, remember my jingle, if you mingle, you mangle. Mm-hmm. So if you mingle Roth contributions to an existing Roth IRA, and then you have to recharacterize those contributions or remove those contributions, the easy part is removing what you put in. The hard part is determining plus any gains minus any losses, because it has to be prorated across the value of the entire Roth IRA. It's not just, you just don't track what your contribution earned. Your contribution could have been put in cash inside of the Roth IRA and just sat there. It depends what the rest of the Roth did. And then it's proportional representation to the money you put in. And it gets to be a little pain in the hiney calculation. Mm-hmm. So to me, just put it off to the side in a separate account and put it in by April 15th of the following year might be what you can do. Mm-hmm. Okay, so I'm not quite sure if that was the answer he expected, but it's the answer that I provided. And I think that's the way he should look at it. Yep. The second part of his question was intriguing, and I had been hoping he would get back to me again today, and he hasn't. He did get back to me earlier this morning. He wanted to know about 457B plans. And what he wrote is in the second part of his email to us, he put that he is a participant in a 457B account at his new job. Oh, here it is. I guess I should have kept reading. He says, I plan to max out my contribution to the 401K, which means he's probably putting in $18,000. So it lends credence to my suggestion of, I think you're going to be able to contribute. Okay. But he can also contribute to a 457B plan. And he wants to know, is a 457B more risky? Is the eventual outcome of that account, he wrote, dependent on the financial strength of the company I work for? When moving to another job, could I roll the 457B to an IRA? So he has a lot of things going on here with 457s. 457s are an obscure little type of retirement account. They're a deferral. Deferral, thank you. salary deferral plan. There are two types of 457Bs. There's governmental 457Bs and tax-exempt organizations, 501(c)(3), 501(c)(3) 457s, and they both operate differently. And that's what I'm trying to find out from him. Does he have the governmental? Now, he said he works for a nonprofit hospital, but believe it or not, some governmental 457s can be hospitals. They can be obviously state and local governments. They can be hospitals and some other types of organizations that operate under like a government charter, so to speak. I don't know what type of hospital he works for. My gut tells me, because he's asking some very specific questions about creditor risk with the 457B, he has the 501c3 457, otherwise known as a top hat plan, which has some unique rules. First of all, they are not available to every employee, only certain employees, generally higher compensated, as well as executives of the nonprofit. Well, he's a surgeon. I'm sure he's one of the highly compensated. The second thing with these types of 457B plans, they are subject to the creditors of the sponsoring organization. Unlike a traditional 457 or an IRA or a 401k, where the money is held essentially in a trust for you, you can have a 401k and the company goes out of business, your 401k is not lost.
Correct.
It's held in a separate trust for you. The company can't get their grubby little hands on it. A 457B, if he is in the tax-exempt organization structure and he's participating in it as a highly compensated individual, and I'm assuming as a surgeon, he is a highly compensated individual of this tax-exempt organization. If he has that type of 457B plan, then his contributions or his salary deferral, because this is a salary deferral plan, are subject to creditors of that organization. It has to be by law subject to the creditors. And because of that, you are not allowed to transfer those types of 457Bs to an IRA when you leave work. And it's because he asked those three unique questions. Can I move this to an IRA? Is it dependent on the strength of the company? And is it more risky? I'm thinking he has that type of 457B plan. Not a general 457B that a state or local government and some hospitals may have. A 457B plan under that scenario are not subject to the creditors of that sponsoring entity. It can be rolled over to a IRA or a 401k when you leave work. And it doesn't carry any unique risks outside of the risks of the investments that you may or may not choose. But that's what I'm trying to find out from him, and he's just not sure. And he hasn't gotten back to me. But it sounds to me like he has a top hat plan, top hat 457B. So my suggestion to him with those, if you do have that one, I don't know what tax-exempt organization you're working for. I don't know if the hospital could eventually be sued someday. What if the hospital, I don't know, kills a bunch of people with some weird thing that happens and they're being sued into oblivion? You do carry that risk. You also cannot move it to an IRA when he leaves. And that's one of the things he wanted to do. And he wanted to know, does it carry any unique risks outside of investment risk? Yes, the risk we just talked about.
Mm-hmm. Right, which just having a few financial struggles probably isn't going to jeopardize it. But if there's some massive event and the hospital system that is running this thing or sponsoring this plan goes under or has to file bankruptcy, then you're going to be in open up a whole can of worms on that. And you can't simply get it protected even when you leave there. You're going to have to start taking distributions from that plan. And until you've taken the distributions out of there, it's kind of stuck and exposed to that situation. So I guess he's going to be the only one who's in a position to make a call about how he feels about the creditworthiness and the financial strength of the place he works. But it is a unique risk, certainly, that most other retirement plans are not affected by
it. Right, and he can't move it. He can only move it to another 457B, but not the general 457B. Only another. He has to go to another nonprofit that has a 457B subject to creditor risk, and he can move it to that one. So he's always going to be locked into the investments of that 457B as well. So I'm not a huge fan of those types of 457 accounts. However, let me say for everyone out there listening, those types of accounts, the top hat ones, are very rare. Most government, if you are a government employee working for a state or local government, or if you are working for a government affiliated or some type of hospital structure, you probably have an okay, well, the government ones, I know for sure, you have an okay 457. It is not subject to the creditors. It can be moved to an IRA. It doesn't carry any risks outside of the risks of the investments. So what you can simply do to find out which type you have, if the 457 is available to anybody there, even the lower paid workers, you have the protected one. If it's only available, if you are a surgeon and it's only available to surgeons and executives, you've got the other one. And if the documents of the 457, you know how they have a Q&A, all of these retirement accounts, all of these benefits come with Q&As. If the Q&A for your 457 says, at your retirement or separation of service, you can move that 457 to an IRA.
You've got the basic government one where you are protected. So that'd be a few ways to know. The Human Resources Department, though, should be able to tell him straight away.
Yes, and that's
just,
what I
just
told
straight
him.
Up.
But he's a surgeon, so we might. I mean, I don't think he's going to drop surgery just to answer my email.
Well, what if it's just a tonsillectomy or something?
Oh, well, then he can listen to the show on Saturday and have his answers. So anyways, people, I do want to thank him
for... What if he listens to our show during surgery?
That'd be interesting. But I do want to thank him for his email. If he could reach back out to me, I know you're listening. You said you were going to listen on Saturday. Email us back. Let us know what state you're in, because I want to see if I can add another star to a state.
That'd be exciting. Upper West.
Yes.
We have a
dearth of people from Minnesota.
We do. Well, we made a call out to the southeastern part of the United States,
and
they've responded.
They've responded, yes.
Yes, but... Yeah, Montana, Idaho, Wyoming, North, South Dakota, the Dakotas.
Nebraska, Kansas, Oklahoma.
Kansas, Iowa.
The Great Plains. The Tornado Barely. Alley. Pull yourself out of the tornado shelters and send us an email.
It's not even tornado season quite yet, but...
It's coming.
They should. It is coming.
It is coming.
They should
okay.
hurry before they lose internet because of the tornado.
Yes. Okay, so that was the only email we got this week.
It was?
Well, we got the one from Hawaii, but that's another financial advisor we have to actually call and reach out to and perhaps do a Hawaii trip to counsel him on Social Security.
That sounds like a wise idea.
See, I told you that blog was going to come in handy. You're going to get a trip to Hawaii. Okay, what I want to talk about next is a unique little... the Denver Post last week had an insert from Morningstar, and it says Guide to Retirement, Morningstar's Guide to Retirement for 2016. It's a cute little magazine. It wasn't anything special in it, but for nothing special because we do this for a living, but I think for people who don't do this for a living, it had some good information in it. So we're probably going to be referencing this a few times over the coming weeks. What I wanted to talk about today is they have 20 mistakes to avoid with your IRA. And I want to talk about them.
This should be good because they're usually top 10 lists, and they've somehow scraped up 20.
This is top 20. Let me tell you, they were really stretching it here to come up with 20.
On a few of them.
Yes. I'm like, that's not really a problem. But anyways, I thought it was unique, so we're going to try to go through these 20. You have no idea what they are. I haven't.
No,
even
I didn't
you...
get the insert. I don't subscribe to the Denver Post, so I did not get it.
No, and I didn't even let you see this.
No.
So you're going to be totally winging it as I go through 1 through 20.
Could be good or bad.
We don't know. And we have to get through 15, not 15. We have to get through 10 of them next half hour so we can cover the last 10 in the last half hour.
That's...
It's going to be hard for me to do that. Yeah. So we may not get... through all 20.
So let's pick the best ones.
We'll pick out the biggest mistakes out of the top 20.
Perfect.
Okay. So how much time do we have?
We have a minute and a half.
Before the music or the music starts in 30 seconds?
The music starts in 30 seconds.
Then I'm going to hold off. Talk for 30 seconds. Say something.
What? Who's Morningstar? Let's talk about that.
Morningstar is a company.
A company that does research.
They do research on investments. Research. They're known for their rankings of mutual funds. But mm-hmm. they have expanded dramatically beyond that, and they offer a tremendous amount of services. Morningstar is huge in our industry, so that's pretty much who Morningstar is. Pretty much everyone has heard of Morningstar.
Oh, I don't know. We all have.
But. We have, right. Okay.
So we're to the end of our second segment here on the Retirement and IRA Show. We're going to move into a little more modern music.
Modern?
Mm-hmm.
Modern?
Modern. You haven't heard that before?
You make fun of the way I talk?
Well, this is the wrong list.
Oh, speaking of that, we got another email last week. Mm-hmm. I got to give a shout out to that guy, too.
Oh, we only have 30 seconds left, so we'll tackle that when we come back. Coming back from this break, we're going to hear the number one song this week from 1976. This hit from 1976 has the word disco in its title. However, it is not considered a disco-style song. So it's a bit of a conundrum. So we'll find out what that is when we come back from this break on the Retirement and IRA Show. Thanks for joining us this break. If you're listening live, this is a news break, so it's a little bit longer, but only just a couple minutes. So we'll be back shortly on the Retirement and IRA Show.
You have listened to Jim on the radio, read his quotes in the media, and enjoyed his banter on iTunes. But even now, you may wonder what sets Jim Saulnier and Associates apart from other financial planning companies. The answer is quite simple. Jim's diverse team of professionals specializes in retirement planning. They form a lifelong relationship with you and measure their success not through product sales, but through the security and prosperity you may achieve in your retirement. Jim's entire team shares his unwavering commitment to placing their clients' best interests first while offering their services at fair prices with full disclosures. The professionals at Jim Saulnier & Associates are available to assist you with your retirement planning needs. Visit jimhelps.com to schedule your complimentary coffee and a second opinion meeting. That's Jim, HELPS.com. Or call 970-530-0556. Social Security.
Welcome back to the Retirement and IRA Show. I mixed it up a little on that one. We'd heard that song enough because it's been number one in 1976 for a while. So that's the 2000 remake by the original artist still.
I didn't even notice.
Johnny Taylor. He funked it up a little. That is Johnny Taylor with Disco Lady. The story behind this is kind of interesting, actually. So staying at number one this week, like I mentioned, it's been, I think this is the third week in a row, is Disco Lady. Even though the title of the song has the word disco in it, only the subject matter is related to disco. Originally, the song was to be titled Disco Baby. The lyrics were inspired by the memory of an African dancer that songwriter Don Davis saw in Spain. He recalled that she had the ability to draw all eyes to her when she started dancing, and he wanted to convey this with the song Disco Lady. So kind of like Miley Cyrus, whenever she dances, everyone's eyes. Or kind of like a train wreck. Anyway.
And why do we do this?
Well, because we were tired of hearing the same old version of that song, so I played the new version.
No. Why do we look through all these songs? Tell our listeners.
Well, the first song was 1935, which was the year that Social Security started. 1976 is 40 years ago, which so happens to be the same as the 40 elapsed years that is discussed in the Social Security rules on how to calculate your retirement benefit. And then coming up on the next break, we're going to hear the number one song from 35 years ago. 35 also relates to Social Security in that it is 35 computational years that are used to calculate your actual retirement benefit at your full retirement age. So this is kind of in honor, or to lead up for us to an update on our blog, which is called helpwithmysocialsecurity.com. So it's kind of a way for us to connect a little bit to one of the main topics on this show that comes up quite a lot, Social Security issues, and then also point out we have an entire website and blog posting that comes up weekly on Social Security at helpwithmysocialsecurity.com. So that's why we do this.
And do we have a new blog post?
We do. We're going to, I'm going to disclose it now?
Nope. That's okay. Next segment.
Okay.
Just ask it.
Well,
you... Because sometimes you don't have one and you say, I don't know.
Oh, I have it.
Okay.
We know these things.
Well, sometimes you don't.
Sometimes I don't, but we do this time.
Excellent. Okay. All right.
So back to the Morningstar article.
Morningstar article. Top 20, well, I can't say top 20, just Morningstar's 20 IRA mistakes to avoid. And then it says these missteps can trigger a trip up, rather. These missteps can trip up newbies and seasoned investors alike.
Perfect. Number one.
Number one, they said waiting until the 11th hour to contribute.
That's a mistake.
That's what they claim. Again, they were stretching on some of these. Has to do with what you were saying at the two segments ago when we were answering that gentleman's question. They're saying those who wait until April 15th of the year following to put money into an IRA risk all the growth that could have been attributed to that contribution not being in the IRA.
True. But they avoid all the losses that could have taken place while it was in there too. So while over the long periods of time, investments such as that would normally go in an IRA have typically gone up on average over long periods of time, in the short period, if we're just talking about a year, who knows? Could be up, down, sideways, upside down.
Right, and think about why this rule exists. It exists because the tax code is so convoluted and confusing as it is. They know because there's restrictions on who can put money into a Roth. There's restrictions on who can put money into a deductible IRA. There's no restrictions on who can put money into a non-deductible IRA, but and there used to be restrictions on who could convert, but not anymore. All these uniquenesses with IRAs, the government just says, look, because we have all these godforsaken rules, and many times you don't know what applies to you until you actually do your taxes, we will let you put money in right up to the point your taxes are owed.
I will say, based on human behavior, it's probably a good idea to set up an automatic contribution schedule where money gets put in, sent in, or automatically deducted from a checking account on a regular basis. People will tend to adhere to a savings strategy when it's done on automatic pilot rather than at the last minute trying to scrape up $5,500 to go in an IRA when you haven't really put aside that much. So maybe I could buy into the idea just to try to avoid typical human behavior.
Okay, I'll buy that.
How about that?
I personally don't put mine in until tax time because my CPA has to determine how much I can put in. And rather than doing the convoluted calculation we talked about, I just do it that way. So I don't really necessarily think it's a mistake because the article, or at least it, and every of these mistakes have one whole paragraph dedicated to them. Their assumption is the money is always going to go up, so you want to get it into an IRA right away. Well, it doesn't always go up. It can go down as well. Mm-hmm. And honestly, in the grander scheme of things, it's not going to impact your retirement at all. No one's ever going to say, oh, that contribution in 2016 that you left sitting in the bank until April 15th of 2017, if you only would have put it in a year and 4 months earlier, you could retire. But you didn't, so you can't retire. I don't see that happening.
No. Number two.
Okay.
Are we going to go in order?
Do you want to skip around? Pick a number between 1 and 20.
Oh, you're going to have to mark them. So we.
I will mark them. Okay. One is done.
How about 13?
Number 13.
Get the unlucky one out of the way.
Do you have a drum roll? No. That's not a drum roll. That's a clapper.
Well, maybe it's a weird sounding drum.
In other words, you don't have a... You have
no, I don't.
A plethora.
I do have a plethora.
Even, of sound effects.
Even crickets.
Crickets. Mm-hmm. But you don't have a drum roll.
I don't. I have no drum rolls. Sorry.
The drum roll would be a good thing to play during a star as well. We could say we have another star.
I'm out of slots on my soundboard is the problem. We'll have to kick something out. Maybe the Mighty Mouse theme.
I think you need a new soundboard program. In today's day and age of unlimited computer data storage...
This holds 18. That's a lot of sounds.
Why are you using a program that limits you to the number of sounds? The hard drive can hold more than 18 sounds. It's mm-hmm. just that the program isn't programmed for more than 18 sounds. My gut tells me you need a new program.
Okay. I'll look into it.
Use PowerPoint. I heard you could use PowerPoint.
This works way better.
Oh, well, just buy another one.
This was free.
Get another free one. That's why it's free. It only holds 18 songs.
Okay, number 13.
All right, number 13. Doubling up on tax shelters. I better read this one because I have no idea what they're talking about.
I know what it is.
What is it?
Putting certain kinds of annuity products inside of an IRA. Something that's already tax deferred.
Or a muni bond, I bet.
Right, something that's already tax deferred. Putting it also in another tax-deferred layer.
Yep,
that's
what it says.
That's just wasting money.
In addition to avoiding, it also makes sense to avoid any investments. It's talking about investments inside an IRA that offers already tax sheltering features. It's because you're paying some type of you're paying for a tax protection. And you're putting it in a tax protected vehicle. So what Chris was alluding to is an annuity inside an IRA. Now, the one thing I do want to point out, we use annuities a lot. Chris is talking a deferred annuity. The annuities we use inside IRAs all the time are income annuities. Mm-hmm. So they're going to pay you an income stream for the rest of your life. Or a QLAC, we talked about them a few shows ago, a qualified longevity annuity contract. Those are annuities designed specifically for IRAs. Chris is talking about annuities that aren't designed for IRAs, and you don't want to put one of those annuities inside an IRA.
But people do it all the time.
I think that's more brokers who are selling them getting people to do that.
Right. People don't usually think of it on their own.
No.
It's somebody selling it to them, and the only money that the client has happens to be in an IRA. And they sell them a product that is, in my opinion, inappropriate for an IRA.
I agree.
But they're allowed to go in there. It's legal to go in there.
Except we have used fixed annuities and fixed indexed annuities inside IRAs because of the 100% principal protection. Mm-hmm. Remember, when we have older people, or not even older people, just risk-adverse people or people who are trying to get better returns than a CD... a fixed annuity or a fixed indexed annuity can also be a fine thing inside an IRA. So I think it really depends on the type of annuity. Mm-hmm. The other thing that they point out, obviously, municipal bonds. Mm-hmm. Municipal bonds pay less interest than a taxable corporate bond because they're issued by municipalities and they're already tax-free. If you buy, we're in Colorado. If we buy a Colorado-issued municipal bond, we pay no state taxes to the state of Colorado on the interest, and we pay no federal taxes to the federal government on the interest. So the interest is 100% tax-free. To compensate us or to entice us, they pay less interest. Because they get these tax benefits, they can pay less interest than a normal taxable bond. So a lot of times people think putting a municipal bond inside an IRA, which is already tax-deferred, makes no sense because interest that would otherwise be tax-free is now going to be taxable.
Which is not as good.
No, if you take it out of a traditional IRA.
Exactly.
Now, in a Roth IRA, I think it's a wash.
Different deal, yeah.
But inside a regular IRA, interest that would normally be 100% tax-free will now be 100% taxable if it's held inside an IRA. So I agree with Morningstar on that one.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, pick any number between 1 and 20 except 1 or 13.
7.
7. Not continuing to contribute later in life.
Okay.
Yeah, I could see you pondering that one.
I'm not sure. They're kind of pushing the limits of the definition of the word mistake.
I told you they kind of reached.
Mistake seems like an error.
Exactly. That's going
to
get you in trouble.
Yes, an error that's going to cost you. Not contributing is an obvious effect. You're not going to have as much money in the account as if you had continued to contribute. So I wouldn't necessarily call it a mistake unless you have a bad reason for not contributing anymore. If you have, you could have a perfectly great reason for not contributing because you have some other alternative opportunity that's preferable. So I don't know that it'd necessarily be a mistake. Or maybe you've amassed so much tremendous wealth in your IRA that by the time you're 55, you don't need to put any more in there.
Well, the point of the point of this, because remember, they give one whole paragraph to each yeah. title. They put not continuing to contribute later in life. A couple mm-hmm. of things I want to point out. You cannot put money into a traditional IRA after the age of 70 and a half, even if you're still working.
Mm-hmm. True.
You cannot put money into a traditional IRA, but you can put money into a Roth IRA, and that's what they're writing about in this paragraph. They're mm-hmm. saying if you are eligible to contribute to a Roth and you continue to work later in life, put some of that in a Roth IRA. Mm-hmm. That's all they're saying, and I agree with that mm-hmm. for one simple reason. We've talked about this on previous shows. Mm-hmm. I tell people, even if you don't open that Roth at an investment house, you can open up the Roth at a bank. If you're a retiree and you're still working, so you have earned income, whether you are 70, 73, 75, 78, 80, if you're still working and you have earned income, put up to $6,500 in a Roth IRA for you and another $6,500 for your wife, assume, or husband, or significant other, assuming you have that much of earned income. Even if you open it at a bank in a bank account, so it's 100% safe, FDIC insured, why would I want you to put money into a Roth? It's not going to get any growth. It gets full bankruptcy protection, people. So if something happens to you later in life, most likely a medical issue, go figure, an older American having a medical issue later in life. You have a medical issue and you have to declare bankruptcy. You will lose money held in a bank. You will not lose money held in the bank inside a Roth IRA. So if you can contribute, but you don't want to take investment risk, don't open an investment Roth. But you can open up a Roth at a bank and buy a CD or just a regular savings account. Leave the money in there. Remember, the money you put in can come out at any time, any reason, no taxes, no penalties. And it's a Roth IRA. And you're over the age of 59 and a half. How do I know this? We're talking about people over the age of 70 and a half. So there are no taxes on the earnings. So assuming the Roth has been open for 5 years, and I'm guessing if you're 70 and a half, it has been, just put money in the Roth. I have no problem with that. Okay. Pick another number.
16.
Is there any rhyme and reason to these picks, or are you just picking randomly?
Fairly random.
Fairly random. How much time do we have?
9.5 minutes.
Isn't that a movie? Yeah.
No.
Yeah, with that blonde woman.
No, you're thinking of 9.5 weeks.
Oh. Well, I knew it was 9.5 something.
It's 9.5 weeks with Mickey Rourke and the female from Romancing the Stone. What's her name?
Sharon Stone?
No. I thought it had...
I think it's Sharon
Kathleen
Stone.
Kathleen Turner.
Stone?
Kathleen Turner.
Kathleen Turner?
No. You read number 16 and I'll tell you. I know it's Mickey Rourke in there.
Okay. No strategy for required minimum distributions. What they talk about here is they remind you that required minimum distributions must begin by age 70 and a half. And that's when the government is going to force you to remove money from your IRA, whether you need it or not. Excuse me, it's that Belgian bug. Did you get what you were looking for?
Kim Basinger. That's who it was.
We were way off. Yeah.
I don't think way off. They both actually have similar looks.
Oh. Okay, so no strategy for required minimum distributions. Here's where I kind of disagree with Morningstar on here, because again, they used the term mistake. I think they made a mistake.
Mm. You're calling them out?
I'm calling Morningstar out.
Wow.
Are they listening?
No.
I don't think so. Okay, here's why. They're saying use the time period of required minimum distributions to reallocate your portfolio, sell some winners, rebalance. It'd be a prime time because you got to take money out, so you got to sell something. So they're saying sell and use that period of time to properly rebalance your portfolio. Use the RMD to your advantage. I disagree with this on two fronts. First front, we don't do that. We will put 1 to 2 years of RMD in cash, so I'm not being forced to sell in a down market. If you have all of your money fully invested and the market is down, you may have to sell. However, I'll go to one step further. You don't have to sell, do you? The answer is no. Say no.
No, you could transfer the assets out
of the
IRA.
There you go. I was waiting for you. Morningstar is telling you to use this time to rebalance. If you if you don't need the cash, clients of ours who need the RMD to live on, we keep 1 to 3 years of RMD in cash so I don't have to sell in a down market. Clients who don't need the RMD, we could either rebalance and distribute cash or just distribute the asset. You, if assuming it's something that's easily distributable, such as a share of a stock or the share of a fund or something of that nature, you can request that that be distributed out. So if it's down and you don't need the money, remember, if you need the money, you should have 1 to 3 years of RMD in cash so you don't have to sell. But if your investments are down and you don't need the money, but you got to come up with the RMD, you don't have to sell when the market is down. Now, granted, you're saying, but Jim, I could sell inside the IRA, distribute cash, and rebuy. Yeah, you could. Or just distribute the asset.
Mm-hmm. Why have the transaction costs?
Right. You don't have to sell unless you need the cash. Then you have to sell. Mm-hmm. So Morningstar is kind of saying, use this time to rebalance. And a lot of people don't, they say. I'm not necessarily thinking that's a mistake, but I think they should have talked more about the ability to distribute an asset and not sell. And I think the mistake is people who do need the cash and don't keep 1 to 3 years of RMD in a safe investment, and now they're being forced to sell into a down market, which can cause their portfolio to run out a lot sooner. They should have money in cash. Okay. Right.
Perfect. How about number two?
Ooh, way back to the other side of the paper. Mm-hmm. Assuming a Roth contribution is always best. Here again, I disagree with Morningstar. They write, investors have heard so much about the virtues of Roth IRAs, tax-free withdrawals, tax-free compounding, no required minimum distribution, that they assume funding a Roth instead of a traditional IRA is always the right answer. And then they write, it's not. For investors who can deduct their IRA contributions and who haven't yet saved much for retirement, a deductible IRA may, in fact, be a better answer. That's because their in-retirement tax rate is probably going to be lower than their pre-retirement tax rate. So the tax break to them is more valuable. I disagree with this advice on a couple of fronts. First, they're not accounting for the widower-widower penalty. Most people are married. Not everyone is like me, a lifelong bachelor.
True.
That someday I'm gonna
meet someone you like.
Yes. Someday, though, I joke I'm gonna marry just to prove everyone wrong, mostly to make.
Well, that sounds like a great idea, great reason. To
honey,
get
will
married.
You marry me? I want to prove everybody wrong. No, someday I'll get
honey,
married.
I lost a bet. Want to get married?
No. I'd like to marry someday. I think it would be nice. I just haven't met anyone. Okay, so the widower-widower penalty, we have to pay attention to all the time when we do retirement planning. Because while two people are alive, you can have a higher amount of income. But as soon as one spouse dies and you inherit the other spouse's IRA, you still have RMDs for the most part. So you're still taking out, especially if you're similar in ages, you're still taking out a similar amount of money, but now you're at a single tax rate, which could push you into a much higher tax bracket in retirement. That's the first thing. The second thing is, I often tell people, you don't know what future tax rates are going to be. You don't know if you're going to be in a lower bracket. If you are in the 15% bracket right now, I got news for you. You're not going to be in the 10, because the 10 is less than $6,000 of income. I don't think you're going to be in the 10. If you are in the 25, could you be in the 15? I don't know. That's a pretty darn big bracket. So a lot of people just assume I'm going to be in a lower bracket. I will argue the point, most people won't be. And if you're a married couple at the death of one spouse, chances are you're going to be in a higher bracket where Roth contributions would be much more beneficial. In addition, I call Roth IRAs the lump sum account. What if you are in retirement and you want to go on a $30,000 cruise around the world? Or you want to buy a $45,000 car, but interest rates are back up to 9% and you don't want to finance it? Or you want to add a new wing to your house? Or you have to elder-proof your house and you're going to redo your bathroom and kitchen to make it more elder-accessible and you need $60,000 to do that. You could take that much money out of your Roth, whether it's $25,000, $30,000, $60,000, and that won't push you into a higher tax bracket. In fact, that money won't even be declared on your taxes because it's 100% tax-free. Morningstar just assumes every distribution from a Roth IRA, in the scenario they described, would be removed in a lower bracket. No, it wouldn't if you take it out for a very big lump sum. So I call it the lump sum account without the lump sum worry. The worry is it's going to push you into a high bracket, which could subject your Social Security to taxes, which could expose you to higher Medicare premiums. You don't have to worry about any of that with a Roth. So for a variety of reasons, I prefer the Roth. I think people who analyze and assume they're going to be in a lower bracket in retirement are so wrong. So I disagree vehemently with Morningstar on this one.
Good points. So we are to our last break here on the Retirement and IRA Show. When we come back, we're going to hear the number one song from 1981. This week in 1981, this number one hit is one of the only times that a demo song was determined so good as recorded that it was released with only minor additions. Interesting.
Is this a demo from a duo?
A demo from a duo, possibly.
So it could be a repeat.
It might very well be.
A duo demo. That's another hint if they listened last week.
Very nice. So this is the Retirement and IRA Show. We'll be back after this short break. Take a listen to some more Morningstar 20 mistakes of IRAs, and we'll suggest maybe how to avoid them or discuss them a little more. We'll be back with you right after this short break.
Are you interested in your own customized Social Security analysis? If so, visit us at helpwithmysocialsecurity.com. And click the Contact Jim and Chris button. Jim and Chris offer a $75 Social Security optimization analysis that includes a one-hour consultation to discuss the specifics of your Social Security situation. This very affordable offer is for both singles and couples and will provide you with the information you need to make an informed decision about claiming your Social Security benefit.
Welcome back to the Retirement and IRA Show. That is the number one song from 1981, 35 years ago this week. Very recognizable song by Hall & Oates. Number one song from last week as well. So the demo tape that Daryl Hall recorded was deemed so good that other than adding a few background vocals and instrumentation through the magic of music mixing, it was released as is. Crazy. That's crazy.
Well, it just shows you how good they were.
Apparently. I'm impressed. I like Daryl Hall. John Oates.
Hall & Oates.
That's not my favorite song, I don't think, but it's all good.
They have some good songs.
They do.
Okay. So we all do this as a lead-in on what's new on helpwithmysocialsecurity.com. And we start with, again, 1935, which is when Social Security was first created. Then we look back to the number one song 40 years ago, because when Social Security was first created, they had a calculation that was based on 40 elapsed years. And then in the 1950s, they switched to 35 computation years, which is what we have today. So that's why we look back to 1935, and then the number one song 40 years ago, and the number one song 35 years ago, all in an effort to lead into what's new on helpwithmysocialsecurity.com.
What's new, pussycat?
So this week on helpwithmysocialsecurity.com, I answer a question from a listener regarding switching from widow's benefits to their own benefits. The timing of that switch, the ramifications of that switch, the ability to collect both. You can't. I guess I'll let that cat out of the bag. But it was all related to a question received from a listener and who is currently receiving widow's benefits, which, of course, a person becomes eligible for those when they reach age 60 if their spouse has deceased. But their own benefit isn't available to them until later. So this listener had a question about how they would switch and should they switch and what are the ramifications of that switch. Happens to quite a lot of people. So that's the topic of our blog post on helpwithmysocialsecurity.com this week.
Excellent.
What's new, pussycat?
All right. Well, we are not going to get through because we got 15 more, but keep...
Oh, we need to hustle.
Keep picking. Well, I get into them. I have to talk a little bit about them.
How about number nine?
Nine was...
Like nine times.
Forgetting about spousal contributions. That could be a mistake. I'll give Morningstar that one. I'm not going to hassle them for that one like I've been hassling them for some of the others.
If you don't do it because you forgot, that is a mistake.
Forgetting your spouse could be a mistake.
That's a huge mistake.
That's a huge mistake. I'm not even married and I know
forgetting
that.
Forgetting a spouse's birthday. Big mistake.
Anniversary.
Bigger mistake.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Especially if the anniversary was her birthday.
Huge mistake.
Or as Trump would say, huge.
Yeah, that would be...
No, that's not Trump. That's the Bernie Sanders guy. Doesn't he say huge?
No, that's Trump.
Is it?
Trump's the huge guy.
Trump's the huge? All right.
It's huge.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So what Morningstar is saying here is don't forget spousal IRAs. You are allowed to open up an IRA for your spouse, especially if your spouse is a stay-at-home spouse. The spouse can open up what is called a spousal IRA. There's no special checkbox on the application, spousal IRA. It's just an IRA that a spouse is allowed, even though the spouse may not have a job. And remember, you need earned income to put money into an IRA. But if that spouse is married to someone with earned income, that spouse, whether it's a he or a she, could contribute to a spousal IRA. Up to certain earnings limits, there's certain rules around them. We're not going to get into them right now. But I'll give Morningstar that is forgetting something to forget putting money in for your spouse.
Mm-hmm. Perfect. How about number 11?
11, next page. Running afoul of the five-year rule. That can be a mistake. Mm-hmm. Let's read this.
Because here's a mistake because there's penalties involved. So any action that generates a penalty, I would clearly label it a mistake. Although, I guess you could intentionally do it. You could say, well, the penalty I'm willing to accept because I need the money for something even more important. But
yeah, Morningstar kind of glosses over this. Remember, they're dedicating a whopping one paragraph to each.
Yeah, in one column, one short paragraph
yes,
in a column.
One very, very short paragraph in a very, very short column. So Morningstar doesn't talk about the two separate five-year rules for Roth IRAs. They're only talking about contribution five-year rules. What is that rule? It simply means if you are under the age of 59 and a half and you take earnings out of your Roth IRA, you will pay taxes and a 10% penalty on that distribution. But if you're over 59 and a half, that five-year rule goes away because that five-year rule has to do with the 10% early withdrawal penalty. The government says the Roth must be opened for 5 years. But I opened my first Roth in 1998. I could open a brand new Roth today at some custodian, put money in it, and boom, all of a sudden I got $500 profit. I have satisfied the five-year rule.
You also need to satisfy, though, the
age 59 and a half.
So this really applies to someone where a person might run afoul of this is maybe they're 57. They open the Roth for the first time, and then they reach age 59 and or 60. And they think, oh, I'm past the requirement. I'm past the 10% penalty phase. But if they were to take earnings out, remember in a Roth, any money you put in can come out at any time for any reason, no taxes, no penalties. But if there were earnings from age 57 to 60, you still would have to wait to 62 before you could get earnings out penalty free.
You wouldn't, tax free.
Tax free.
You still have to pay, you wouldn't pay the penalty because you're over 59 and a half.
Tax-free is what I meant. Yes. The penalty goes away at 59 and a half, but the tax-free element of it also has to, you also have to meet the five-year rule.
Absolutely. And that applies even in death. If you inherit a Roth IRA and the owner did not own it for 5 years, you still have to wait until the fifth year to get the earnings out.
Interest-free. You can take them out. You can choose to take them out. But you might owe interest on them.
But remember, people, the money you put in can come out at any time for any reason, no taxes, no penalties.
Right. There's another five-year rule, though. Are we going to talk about that?
Yes, and they don't get into that one. They just say, when it comes to conversions, make sure you talk to your tax advisor.
Oh, that's how they get around it? Because the conversions have another five-year rule.
They could have made this 21 tax mistakes by making this one its own mistake, I not agree. Just saying talk to your tax advisor.
Yeah.
Converted amounts have their own separate five-year rule, and each conversion has its own separate five-year rule, and that's to avoid the 10% penalty. The first five-year rule Chris and I talked about was to get growth or earnings out of your Roth tax-free. To avoid the 10% penalty on a conversion, each conversion must be held for 5 years. Now, once you're 59 and a half, the 10% penalty goes away, so that particular five-year hold on conversions also goes away. But what they're trying to do is people who are tricky. You know, if you take money out prior to the age 59 and a half, you're going to suffer 10% penalty. So let's say you're 50 years old and you're thinking, oh, I need $10,000. I'm going to take this out of my IRA, but ooh, I'm going to have to pay taxes on the $10,000 and a $1,000 penalty. So you say, oh, I get it. I'm going to convert that $10,000 to a Roth because the money that I convert can come out 100% tax-free. Why? Because when you convert it, you pay taxes. But the act of converting avoids the 10% penalty. So you convert the money to a Roth IRA, pay taxes, and then you think, now I'm going to withdraw it from the Roth and avoid the 10% penalty. And
only if you plan way ahead.
They're going to get you on that.
Has to be 5 years.
Right.
Or you have to reach age 59 and a half.
Right. Yeah. Even if you're Roth, even if you have been a participant in the Roth program for as long as I have, 1998, if I converted an existing IRA as a 52-year-old, I will pay taxes on the conversion. And then let's say 3 years later when I'm 55, I want to remove that money. Even though I've been in Roth IRAs since 1998, I will be hit with a 10% penalty because I removed a converted amount within the first 5 years. Now, once I hit 59 and a half, the 10% penalty goes away, so that rule is moot. But those are the 2 5-year rules.
Perfect.
Okay.
18.
18. Mm-hmm. Not using QCDs. We've talked about them ad nauseum, and I'm going to talk about them again. I like QCDs, qualified charitable distributions. Although I would say it's not so much not using them, it's using them
incorrectly.
Right. That's the mistake. They don't talk about it. They just say you should use QCDs. That's when somebody over the age of 70 and a half, excuse me, over the age of 70 and a half takes money from their IRA tax-free, not from a Roth IRA, but from a traditional IRA, takes it tax-free to use as a charitable donation. However,
there is a mistake here. If they maybe lived off money that was coming out of their IRA, while on the other hand, sending a charitable contribution from money out of their bank account, I would call that a mistake because they've now exposed themselves to taxes where they wouldn't have otherwise had to pay them.
Right, but the QCDs have a certain amount of rules. You have to be over the age of 70 and a half. So if somebody is 70 and 4 months and does this, isn't going to work.
Right.
You can get no benefit from the charity. So if you make a donation from your IRA to a charity and that charity sends you a free ticket to, I don't know, a free ticket to some
movie
or festival or a free food coupon at the funnel cake aisle, if you get anything of value, QCD isn't allowed. If you receive the money first and then send it to the charity, QCD isn't allowed. So there's certain rules that have to be followed. But I agree with Morningstar. It's a mistake not to use them if you're charitably inclined. Now, people say, what's the difference, Jim? If I take $10,000 from my IRA, declare it as income, and then write off $10,000 in a charitable deduction or do a QCD. I agree. At first glance, it seems like a wash. But remember, money that comes out of an IRA gets not a QCD, but just a distribution, does get thrown into your modified adjusted gross income. Could subject your Social Security to taxation. Whereas if you did it as a QCD, maybe you wouldn't have to pay taxes on your Social Security. It could push you into a higher tax bracket. It could, if you're a higher wage earner, it could a better saver, not necessarily a higher wage earner, so you have large amounts of income coming in. This could cause you to lose certain deductions because it is declared as taxable income. The big thing is Social Security taxation. It could push you and cause your Social Security to be taxed. Whereas if you did it as a QCD, it doesn't even get declared on your 1040. So it can keep you in a lower bracket or allow you to get tax-free Social Security. So I'm a fan of QCDs. I just don't think Morningstar explained that paragraph very well.
Perfect. 15.
Triggering a tax bill on an IRA rollover.
Is that not making the 60 days? Missing the 60 days?
You would think.
I might think that, yes.
That's not what they were talking about.
So generating a tax bill on a rollover from a 401k?
Yeah. What Morningstar is saying here, a rollover. Why don't you explain what a rollover is, seeing as I get the Belgian bug and I can't talk.
Okay. So a rollover, typically the way we use that word, it gets, depending on who you're talking to in the industry,
Let's call it a 60-day
rollover.
Some
play a little kind of loose with the rules or with the definitions here. But if we're talking a 60-day rollover, that's when you receive the the distribution from the retirement account. You have then up to 60 days to put it back into a qualifying retirement account, either the same account it came out of or another qualifying account, to avoid taxes and possible penalties by it being treated as a distribution rather than a rollover. So there's what we call, now we have changed the words a little bit. I guess I made fun of people for change of the definitions. There's what's called a direct rollover. That is the official words for it. We call it a direct transfer because we don't like how people interpret the word rollover. Direct transfer is when it goes directly from one retirement account to another, where the beneficiary of the account, the owner of the account, never gets to touch the money. That's how it's different than a 60-day rollover. When you transfer from one retirement account to another, you never have to worry about missing the 60-day period because it goes directly from one to the other. There's no taxable event there as long as you're doing it with qualifying accounts. But clearly there's a risk something's going to go wrong if you distribute to yourself and then have this clock ticking. The other issue that comes up with 401ks, now IRAs aren't like this, but 401ks, if there's a distribution made from a 401k, the 401k administrator is required to withhold 20% of the distribution and send it to the government kind of like they withhold money from your paycheck for taxes and they send it to the government on your behalf. Here they're withholding money from the distribution and sending it to the government. So if you take you want to move $10,000 from your 401k to an IRA, the worst way to do it, in my opinion, is with a 60-day rollover. You're going to ask for $10,000 to be taken out. They're going to send you a check for $8,000, send $2,000 to the Treasury, to the IRS. You now have to put $10,000 back into an IRA in order to avoid an early distribution penalty or paying taxes on the $2,000. So you only got $8,000, so you got to come up with the other two somehow, so that might be a problem. But the other problem is now the IRS is holding $2,000 of your money, which you may or may not owe that at the end of the tax year. Now, yes, you can get it back in the form of a refund if it turns out you don't owe it, but if you do this rollover early in a year, you might have 12 months or more before you see that money back. That sounds like a horrible way to go, when you could have just done a direct transfer directly from the 401k to the IRA. There's no 20% withholding requirement, and there's no 60-day clock to worry about. It just happens directly, no effect on your taxes, much cleaner and safer way to go. That must be what they're talking about.
Yes, and they also say you'll pay taxes if you miss the 60 days. Yep. So not only the 20%, but if you miss the 60 days.
Open the door to the risk of missing the 60 days, absolutely.
Okay.
Number six.
You're all over the board
here. Since we have 6 minutes left.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. There was a reason for that.
Assuming the backdoor Roth is off limits.
I don't know why someone would assume that. If they're smart enough to know what a backdoor Roth is, one would think they would know enough to know the rules on the backdoor Roth, but maybe not. Maybe they heard someone utter the words backdoor Roth at dinner in the booth next to them. So they're curious, but they think, oh, I couldn't possibly do that. I don't know.
What they're talking about, what a backdoor Roth is, again, remember in the first segment, we had a gentleman who thought he was going to be earning too much to put money into a Roth. There's another way, excuse me, to get money into a Roth. You put the money into a non-deductible IRA. Anybody and their uncle, Bill Gates or Warren Buffett, the two richest men in the world, they could open up a non-deductible IRA and put $6,500 in on Monday and then on Tuesday convert it to a Roth. However, you can only do that. You can only do the back door if you don't have an existing IRA already. The strategy works best for those people. I don't want to get into the reasons why. We don't have enough time. So sometimes, Morningstar is writing, people see, oh, I have an IRA already. I can't do the backdoor Roth. And Morningstar is saying no. Now, it's a little misleading because it's going to require a strategy. What Morningstar is advocating is you take the IRA, roll it to your employer's 401k. So the first thing Morningstar is assuming is
you have one.
You have a employer with an existing 401k, and that 401k accepts transfers in, and not all do. Most do, but they don't have to.
Right.
But Morningstar is saying you could then take the IRA, roll it or transfer it to the 401k. Now you have no IRAs.
Mm-hmm.
And you can do the backdoor Roth. You can put money into a non-deductible and then declare it tax-free on your taxes. Mm-hmm. So that's what Morningstar is saying. One thing I want to warn people on, though, with this, and Ed Slott pointed this out to us recently, there's no ruling from the IRS that they would allow that as a viable strategy. I personally think they would because there's nothing against transferring it in.
Mm-hmm.
But there is no definitive, yes, you can do this. I don't think it's going to be an issue.
Yeah.
But it also assumes people have a 401k at work, and not everyone does.
Right. So how about number 10?
Delaying contributions because of a short-term need or consideration.
I think this is more not specifically an IRA question, but a don't forget to save for retirement question. don't choose that vacation now thinking, oh, I'll make up for it later, because it's that kind of thinking that, well, first of all, that's what got big corporate pensions in trouble, where they under-contributed for a while when they were struggling financially, thinking they would make it up later, and it just snowballed them, and pretty soon it turned out that they have a non-fully funded pension plan. Well, you can think of your own retirement accounts as the form of your pension plan, your ability to live in retirement, and if you, through your actions of not contributing regularly and in substantial enough amounts while you're working, you'll find yourself in a position of having a major lifestyle cutback or not being able to feed yourself and medicate yourself and all those kinds of things for as long as you plan on living. So.
Right, and that's what Morningstar was driving at. Mm-hmm. People who don't save in their IRAs because they say, I might need the money. The younger me needs it, not the older me. And I disagree on that vehemently. You know that I always say it is the younger you that has to save for the older you. But Morningstar points out that IRAs, unlike 401ks, when you're working at the 401k, it's very difficult to get money out of that account while you're working there. IRAs carry no such restrictions. So if you're worried about a short-term need, Morningstar is saying, look, you can get at the money. And we talk about it all the time, and they say, especially if it's going into a Roth, because we said this repeatedly, the money you put into a Roth IRA can come out at any time for any reason, no taxes, no penalties. But money going into a traditional IRA can come out at any time as well. The only trade-off is there could be taxes and penalties. But the liquidity, the ability to access money in an IRA is there. So they're saying it's a mistake to not save for retirement or save in an IRA under the guise you might need it. To me, people who do that, it's just an excuse. Oh, I'm not going to save. They're not putting that money in the bank. They just turn around and, oh, I'm going to go buy this new TV because, God forbid, I want to put it in an IRA. I might need it. Right. I can pawn the TV. Well, that's the wrong approach. Put the money in. Remember this, people. I say this repeatedly. Saving for retirement is the younger you putting money aside for the older you. It's not that you're not going to spend it. The 70, 75, 80-year-old is going to want to spend the money just as much as the 50 or 55-year-old. Put some aside for them.
So here we are at the end of another episode of the Retirement and IRA Show. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We'll be back to you next week with a brand new show.
You have listened to Jim on the radio, read his quotes in the media, and enjoyed his banter on iTunes. But even now, you may wonder what sets Jim Saulnier and Associates apart from other financial planning companies. The answer is quite simple. Jim's diverse team of professionals specializes in retirement planning. They form a lifelong relationship with you and measure their success not through product sales, but through the security and prosperity you may achieve in your retirement. Jim's entire team shares his unwavering commitment to placing their clients' best interests first while offering their services at fair prices with full disclosures. The professionals at Jim Saulnier & Associates are available to assist you with your retirement planning needs. Visit jimhelps.com to schedule your complimentary coffee and a second opinion meeting. That's Jim, HELPS.com. Or call 970-530-0556.
Like what you just heard? Missed some of today's show? Listen again on iTunes or the Retirement and IRA Show.com.
The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer, member FINRA SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.